The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast with Pete and Steve. Paddy said he's going to join, but then he said he wasn't. So Saturday morning may not be good for me now, but obviously it's not good for me. Called him, he's not there. He's probably queuing up B&Q, is he, or something there?
Probably, but yeah. Standard Saturday for Pad.
That's what he does, yes. I want to get in the front of the queue to buy some of that, MDF.
Balsa wood.
Anywhere else.
Balsa wood.
MDF. Balsa wood used to be... the only thing I think balsa was used for is the little planes, model planes years ago. Do you remember?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
By the way,
we should. I was going to say, with, Paddy, Pete, and Break Even Stephen, but now I think we should rename Steve to, we should call him, maybe call him Cashpot Depletion Stephen.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because you've had a rough week, Steve, haven't you?
Sell stocks at minus. I don't even want to talk about it, yeah.
Well, we'll talk about it. That's the point of the podcast. So, do you know what? I was away. I'm surprised you didn't do the weekend podcast without me, guys. You know, I think it was an ideal opportunity to come, Steve, to come on and just chat about tickers.
Yeah.
Right, next stock, UOG.
Exactly. I am generally trying to think of a podcast to do for myself, but every time I've got the technical layout, I want to do it. I've just got no content for it, which I kind of think is the important bit. Really,
yeah, that is the important bit of content. But yeah. Podcast, it's going to be subject driven, you know? It's going to be a bit niche. Can't just be DJs just chatting on air non-stop about anything, because I give advice to somebody else to that. And, you know, but
I've already said to Steve that he should just do a completely, you know, deadpan rundown of his investing career. You know, kind of the opposite to your podcast that you're doing, Justin. So, you know, it's just, well, then I bought, you know,
the thing is,
and I held them for 5 years and lost thousands of pounds. And,
yeah.
You've got a strange sense of humour, Pete, so you probably would find it funny. Everyone else would probably think, this is very strange.
Yeah, Peter being biggest fan. One listener again, Pete, that was me. I loved it, Steve. Just me, though, I think.
Me.
Yeah, but like I said, it'd been 2 weeks, I think it was now, isn't it? I've been away for, I've been to Majorca, yeah. Do you know Majorca, right? Because the last time I went to Majorca was like when I was, after A-levels, I went working in Magaluf, and that's the image I have of Majorca, you know, apart from when I went there as a kid with my parents, but that's the image I have of Majorca, but it's gorgeous. Some parts of Majorca, absolutely gorgeous. The place we went to was way away from Majorca, and it was near Calador, but it was lovely, some of the places there. The coves, the beaches, like the hotel we had, a private beach, it's gorgeous. And and it's nice, my son's at a certain age, where it's like it's half term, isn't it, or summer holidays, so there's loads of kids there. They spent all day playing with their friends. One day we managed to drag them away and said, let's go hire a boat. Right? So we hired this boat. It didn't turn out well.
No.
Thing is, if you look at the pictures I've got, it looks like a speedboat. But essentially, it was a crate. You're not allowed to have fast boats, of course. If you get a fast boat, you have to have some qualification, I assume. I don't understand the laws of the sea. I think anyone can just get on a boat and just... If you've got enough money, you can just buy a boat and drive it, can't you? Who's going to stop you? It's not like a road test, is it, you have to take, is there?
There are various qualifications say you are more competent at sea, but I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. You can literally just take a boat out. Yeah.
If I was, Roman Abramovich, just buy a boat and take it out. But of course, you'd hire people to do it for you. But
that scale of boat have crew on.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's not Roman. Just bluffing around the Mediterranean in a massive yacht.
It wasn't like 200 euros. So we had this little. It was like a nice little thing. The seats were lovely, but it was like a crate. It had no sort of pointy front end. It was like a front end was straight with a gate there.
Are you sure that wasn't the back?
Yeah. trying to hit them all the way around, waving at everyone.
The back was well pointy.
Yes, it was. What's wrong with these seats? Why are they facing the wrong way? So we got to go in and we come out of port. You know, 3 knots out of the port of Calador there. And after that, let's get it going, boys. Me, the wife, two boys. And I sort of ramped it up to 5.5 knots. And that's basically top speed, right? And then we went past this other boat that went past these flash sods in this big boat. And we got really turbulent and choppy. And our front end, the boys were all smiling at this point, and the front end dipped, right? And a big wave came off the top, and it started tipping over. It was like the Titanic. And literally before this, my kids were smiling with no life jackets on. I've never heard Monty, my 8-year-old son, swear so much in his life. He was in SSFSS, take me back, take me back. He was screaming his head off. And the boys got life jackets on. They just didn't enjoy it then for the next 2 hours. Oh, it's not that bad, boys. We went around another cove, though, a lovely little beach, and jumped off rocks and stuff. But that entire time, I think he was psychologically scarred for life now. He doesn't want to go anywhere near a boat. We're on a Tuesday, that was on a Saturday, we had another boat hired, you know, more of a speedboat with a pointy end. And he's like, right. I'm not going in, I'm not doing it, I'm hating it, it's the worst, worst thing about my experience of my life.
Oh.
And, but I quite enjoy it. I even entertained thoughts of getting a boat. I thought, oh.
That'd be good. The Share Pickers podcast live from Megan. Or Megan.
What?
What do you mean? Because I'm dead.
Sorry.
Well, obviously, you'd name the boat after your wife, yes?
Oh, I see. Right,
oh, okay.
See, yeah, yeah.
That's not normally the case, but okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, but it is quite nice. And yeah. try a couple of things out there. Tried, what's that thing that Orlando Bloom tried? You know, I did that.
Paddleboarding.
I tried that in Dominican Republic. I was okay at it. I didn't fall off a couple of times. On this one we hired, literally, I fell off for maybe 2 seconds. I couldn't stand on it. Katy Perry and Orlando Bloom, naked I was. Yeah. And but I couldn't do it. I kept falling off all the time. And she, in the end, she said, just get off it. I'll lie on it and sunbathe.
Yeah. So there's a recurring theme. So that was the boat's fault that you weren't very good at that. It was the paddleboard's fault that, you know,
what's wrong with these products? I think there's obviously a productive fault issue in Mallorca there. Let's see how they've got ports and all those boats floating when there's obviously something wrong with a lot of them.
Yeah, so,
sort yourselves out, guys. Anyway, that's so much stuff. But no, I do. Do you know what? I've even been looking at buying a place in Mallorca there. We're looking around. Gorgeous. Yeah. Some of the places. I mean, as I said, my thoughts of Mallorca is Magaluf and all that stuff. But there's some gorgeous places. And do you know what's nice? 1 hour 50 on the plane.
Yeah.
That's it.
So what's traveling like these days? Because I haven't even looked at going abroad because I don't even know what the amber list and all that, and all the faff of the masks and the, I don't know what you'd have to do and potential quarantine, all that stuff. What was it like? What was your experience of traveling in these days?
So we double jabbed, didn't we? Me and Megan double jabbed. The kids, obviously, are 11 and 8. They don't need anything. But I think, did we take a PCR test before we left? I think we made, before we came home, we had to do a test. I don't know if PCR. Lateral flow test. Me and Megan, yeah, the kids did, all of us. So before we left, 2 days before we left, we got some now arrived, to do them again. Now we're home, but we did check anyway. But the thing is, all these, you know, these companies in our country, there's a lot of stock pickers who are obsessed with these, COVID testing companies. Mm. Every test, and we've had quite a few now because we're on this system as well, being tested regularly. And everyone we've had been made in China. Not one of them made in Britain. Mm. They're all made in China. And I thought, well...
Yeah.
Isn't that the case with everything, though? Most things are made in China, but it's not really...
Yeah, but wasn't it a case that I've heard people saying now the government are asking you to do tests because they've bought so many of these from China, filling out warehouses, and they can't... They go, please get through these. That's how we... I mean, you know, it's landfill, but I mean, they're all from China, pretty much. But it's not too bad. We got through... Heathrow was fine. We got through Heathrow. It was like... where is it? Coming into Mallorca was... The queues are quite big. It's not too big. Heathrow, coming out of Heathrow, this other side, the fastest we've ever done. We landed like about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We're out by three quarters an hour, through back in the car, driving home. So it was fine.
How do they do the passports with your mask on?
You have to put your mask down, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Put it down, please. Yeah. Right. Here put it down.
Your mask, please.
Just the mask, thanks. And you put it down, you've got another mask underneath. Hey! three, four, five masks, hey! It's not too bad. I think, when you think of it, I mean, it's the press want to, stoke up problems, chaos at the airports, because they love that, and they sensationally, you go there, there's no chaos at the airports. When you think of it, it's probably half capacity at the moment, so maybe it's a bit slow going through, But
and actually in Mallorca, are they fairly relaxed, or is it all?
Yeah, no. So I mean, they, you know, all the staff, they, you know, I feel sorry for the staff. The staff wear masks all the time. If you go in, you know, in the restaurants, you have to have a mask on. But sitting down at the table eating, you obviously don't. But you just put it on for, you know, go to the buffet or whatever, or and everything else is normal. So, you know, sunbathing pools, all that stuff's fine. But,
yeah, and obviously if you've got your own villa or whatever, you wouldn't need any of that. So,
yeah, we were at a hotel, but I mean, it's like, you know, in the enclosed areas, you put the mask on, but generally you don't spend much time in enclosed areas, the reception, all that place. So you're just outside, having food outside all the time. So it's all cool, it's all good in the hood.
But, okay.
I just think it's overdone at the moment. I think we're getting to the stage where it's not even necessary. But by the way, WhatsApp chat this week, I said, any questions? Steve said, why is the skate punt going up and down so much? Then Pete said, why is the skate punt going up and down so much?
Similar question.
And Steve said, when do you predict the market will start to recover? Then Pete typed, when do you predict the market will start to recover? Then Pete said, I've just realised that my questions are quite similar to Steve's. just ask his. And then Paddy said, on reflection, were Paddy and Pete probably right when they suggested back in May the excitement about reopening was already priced into a skate punt?
Yeah.
Peter, good question from Paddy. Paddy said, thanks, Pete. I said, hang on a sec, that was exactly what I was talking about. That was my thing. Obviously, Paddy's nicking that. That's what I said. I think we'll have a bounce. The stock market, I think, literally...
No. Hold on, because Paddy's not here, I'll defend him. Well, back in about May, I think you were talking about, there was that countdown to lock. Unlocking, wasn't it? Sort of like you were kind of going, yeah, it's going to be pushing
on. Yeah, but
now.
No. But that the rise towards that, the journey to that was what I was talking about. After that, it's not. I think, you know, once it's that's all about that. That there is exactly what the stock market is all about. It's the anticipation of news. Is it always bigger than actual news?
But the now infamous sock eating claim was all built around that, wasn't it?
Yeah, but that was before. Yeah, but it was five, 10 days before opening. So I was saying if it was going to hit 50 bends early, and
the way you were talking was it was 50 pence and then beyond, and then it was that was all, and then it, yeah, then it would calm down. But
and even after that, you did say it'll go at 5 pence every month.
Well, yeah, that was a ridiculous.
Well, no, but hang on a sec. I think it'll still do that if you look. It won't, and I said it won't go straight up. Of course, it won't. No stock price goes straight up, and you have to have, you know, like I said, a hangover after a party, and that's what's happened with the market since March 2020. We've had a heck of a rally, so this, you know, sort of settling down and selling off is a natural part of that, you know? Yeah. In fact, do you know what? Steve, your question there, when do you predict the market will start to recover? So I did a Twitter poll and I said the first third of the third quarter is nearly done. How's your portfolio done? Good, 7.3%. Okay, 25.9%. Don't ask, 66.8%. So it's like... it's still painful at the moment, and it'll happen. I think we've hit the bottom. I generally do. You could see that by when I was on holidays. I look at this portfolio all the time, and it's like at the first sort of 5 days, 6 days. It was a nightmare. It's like grinding lower all the time, and all of a sudden we had that big day, big rally day, and things started turning around. When you see days like that, that's a watershed. That's almost like, I don't know if the tide comes in. Sometimes you've got one wave that comes up further than the rest, and of course it takes a while from all to start coming up. But that's what happens. You start to get that one initial day change in liquidity, and a couple of nice days. But we'll go sideways for a while now, I think, and it will rally. And I think Q4 will be amazing. But we may grind sideways, have a couple of rally days. It won't be all red. I said this before, it won't be all red in your portfolio. You get a couple of greens, a couple of reds, but it won't be all red like it was previously, which was painful, really painful. And I think, you know, when you're looking at the portfolio, and I said this in the webinar at the Shear Pickers Investment Club, treat yourself like a passive fund manager, right? Just... try to, don't worry about the portfolio too much day on day, week on week. Just try and look at it quarter on quarter. Just because if, you know, the end of last quarter, it sort of dipped down. But the first 2 months of the first quarter or second quarter is okay. And then it dipped down. And that's dipping for 3 months now. And it'll rally. Generally, you don't see a market of that dipping for that long. So I think end of this quarter, which is the end of September, compared to the previous quarter. And a passive fund manager, that's where you are. You own stocks. You are a fund, essentially. Now, fund managers don't sell every day. Don't panic about share prices every week. If you invest in a company, you know, that's growing, that's improving, that's a reasonable value, there's no cash issues, it'll do well. It's fine. It's in a hot sector. It'll do well. But you've got to step back a bit, you know?
So, obviously, my question was escape. I understand, and I'm not worried. I'm not panicking at all. But like Escape Hunt this week did have like a sharp, like, was it about 12% one day, then it had a minus 10% the next? Is that just people buying and selling Escape
Hunt? No, around. So, yeah, no, so it's jumped up. So I said, Escape Hunt has done, I said recently, I said, listen, fear is your friend. You know, when we had that sell off and people get worrying, people are selling at exact, mostly private investors are selling at the exact time you should be buying. That's the difference. You buy low, sell high. And it's all relative, of course. But if you'd bought at the low when Escape Hunt was down, you'd be up now, what was it, 36%? I think it was, you know, from the low to the recent high. That's about, or 28 or 36% it was, I tweeted out. And I said, that was the fee. The big, you see, the big volume day, the sell day, was the day you should have been buying. And that's,
so
when
that's
you,
why it, that's why it peaked back up. It was just people buying on the low days then.
Well, no, yeah, people were selling then, but no, the sellers get exhausted, you know, after a while. The people who panicked and jumped out and peed their pants, they're out. And then all of a sudden, it's very, I mean, see, there's a lot of things happening here, right? First of all, you've got the Delta variant, which there's panic about, but now seemingly isn't this problem. And the COVID stats suggest that now. It's, you know, cases are coming down, and the amount of people that go to hospitals is nowhere near where it was. But you've also got interest rates, fears, all this stuff in America and churn. Plus, you've got seasonality. There's generally less volume in summer, right, of stock. So any sales are exaggerated. You know, they hit the share price a bit more, and he buys, and it'll calm down a bit. And but you know, John, I see it like this, right? And this is a nice analogy for you. The market, the stock market, is like rain. It's like weather and rain. All right. Now, if you look at it, right, the entire UK on average gets 133 days of rain per year. It may seem more than that, but there's a lot more dry days than rainy days, right? So every rainy day is 2.74 dry days. So the more rainy days you have, the more chance you have of having a dry day around the corner. It's the same with the stock market, pretty much. It's literally every 3 years, two are good years, one a bad year. It doesn't work like that. You know, of course, you can have good quarters, bad quarters, but that's just the ratio. So the more bad days you have, the closer you are to a good day, you know, because statistically that's the way it works. So it's not a flip, it's not random. It generally, the more time you spend in the market, the more likely you are to do well. So jumping out on the bad days, and of course, do you see that? Let me go to the chart there. The big day in Escape Hunt happened almost within days, and we talked about this before, within days of the bad down day, you know. So it dropped down to 28 pence. This is from 58 pence. The next day, it rallied 12.28%. Then it dipped down a couple of days. Then it rallied again. But it's gone from 28 pence now to, what, 36 pence in thing. And, and I think this is backward. It'll go sideways for a while now. But I think if we get some decent updates, it'll start to rally. But, yeah, it's lots of things. But seasonality, like I said, the, you know, Delta variant, inflation worries, all that stuff. But, like I said, you know, people keep talking about this and inflation worries and all that. And I'm thinking, do you think, you know, the best long-term investors who've picked the best stocks in the world ever, you know, did well because they sold out every time the macro bears start saying, oh, there's worries about inflation, or there's interest rates happening, or there's debt, or impending stock market crash? No, they didn't. They just held, you know, because they're invested. You can't, in fact, economists are so wrong so often on so many things that are seemingly obvious. Like, oh, inflation's around the corner. And generally doesn't happen. They've been talking about that for 10, 20 years pretty much now. So don't worry about the macro. You have no control over it. All you have control over is the company you hold. And I think if you want to do really well, you just hold. You have dips. That's volatility. You know, that's the way it is. And anyway, look at this volatility on these. Where's that thing I was looking at the other day? And I just looked at the volatility on some stocks. It's about, let me just find it. On some of the big stocks they've had, and you think, wow, they've had some volatile days. There we are. I said, volatility in the market is normal, even for the most well-known stocks. From peak to trough, Apple has lost over 70% of its value three times during its history. 70%, you know? But if you'd held that, wow. Amazon has fallen by 90%. You know, drawdowns. But if you'd held that again, wow. Facebook has lost more than 40% of its value in just 2 months in 2012. So, you know, that's it's expected. Volatility is expected. And it's easy for us to panic. But if you want to do well, and you're in good businesses, like I said, growing, and remember that, growing. Growth is the thing. Growth, 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 all the time, first of all. But is it reasonable value? and is in a hot sector and they have no cash worries, heading towards profitability. If you've got those things there, don't worry. Just sit back, relax and chill. But you've got to be in the right stocks, I suppose, you know.
But the thing with, being a private investor, really, and looking at your portfolio and not wanting to get too overexposed, you do need to just kind of sit. So the escape on it drops. You think, well, I could go more into that, but I'm about 20% of my portfolio. I don't want to be any more exposed than that, really. So, yes, it's tempting to put more in, but then I'd have to sell other stocks or bring some other cash in or whatever. But then I don't want to be that overexposed in one stock like that, because 20% is kind of like a comfortable exposure level. But yeah. So it's you do end up, and I know your strategy is kind of five stocks, 20% ish of each ish roughly or whatever, and so you do end up going, well, there is nothing to do. You might well just leave it alone and come back to
it. Just mess around with crypto's on. I tweeted out today. I said, listen, I said this a couple of days ago, Bitcoin is looking like it's on course for a bull run. Look at the MACDs and look at the previous ways and RSI. But talking about it's a good. Somebody asked me this question on Discord, the WhatsApp, sort of the Sharepicker Investment Club, and I said, first of all, because someone said they're in 50% in one company, you know, one of the five that I hold, and I said, you know, that can be a bit much, because I tell you, it's not because you're going to lose money. I said, be careful with overexposing, because it can make you overthink, over worry and overreact. You know, that's the thing. You are, the more, you know, you hold of a company, the more emotional you get. You're a human. And that's why I say five stocks around 20% each, a stable balance, not just financially, but emotionally, you know. And I say, obviously, I have no idea of news that's coming up, but, you know, you've got to be, you don't want to sort of make quick judgments on, because I've done this before. I've overthought things, and I've based my investment decisions on emotion, because I've been too heavily invested in one stock, and I've ended up selling down, which is probably not a bad thing, but then I've sold out to some companies, and they've rallied. And I thought, oh, why do you do that? It's because my perception was incorrect. I was too emotionally invested in a company. So I think 20%, you know, is in each company's quite a nice balance. And someone said, what happens if your company rises and you get overexposed? And I know you've asked this before, and I did have a think about it, and I thought there's two different types, really, of overexposure, right? Two different types. Steve, name them.
Really overexposed, and kind of overexposed.
That's three. That's even better, Steve.
There we go.
I said, basically, it's two different types of overexposure. One is active accumulation. Two, passive capital appreciation. And so what I mean by that, so if you're buying a company and, you know, you keep accumulating and you go above, say, you know, a certain level of exposure, then it can be quite worrying. You know, so if you're actively accumulating, be careful, because the share price could move against you and it could get painful. You know, it can get painful then. But however, if you've done your research and are happy with potential growth, valuation, cash they have, it's about risk tolerance. It's all about that. It comes down to your risk tolerance. How much can you take? You know, so with passive capital appreciation, basically a share price of a company going up that you had a decent exposure to, but now it's grown very big. I said, it's not as risky, because the company is doing something right. They've got momentum there. Something's happening that's going right. So it's moving in your direction. I mean, and holding on to your winners can transform your portfolio as long as the rise is sustainable. Now, if you've got a company you're holding there, and it's like pre-revenue company in some way, doesn't matter what sector it is, but that share price rise is based off hope, hype, potential, and there's no fundamental backing, like, you know, revenue, profits, then that's less sustainable. That's more likely to pop and drop. And in fact, we've just seen that now pretty much with power. It happens with resource stocks, of course, they are pre-revenue. But it's happened with Power's Energy as well, because there's no revenue coming in, and that's rallied like crazy. It's one of the ones I got out of. But I didn't play the hope hype cycle right on that one. I got it way too early, and I missed out a massive gain. And so they will need to now, the hype cycle's happened there, it's popped, it's dropped. They will need now to start generating some financial revenue to sustain that rise again, because, you know, they're nowhere near that. But, so if you're accumulating...
Can I add in a third way, is that other stocks in your portfolio drop away, and so one stock becomes you know, inadvertently you become overexposed in one stock.
Yeah, that's not bad. Good. I know. It's not bad again, though, because that's, I mean, it's either holding its own or it's rising a little bit. So that's not bad.
In terms of overexposure within your portfolio, so suddenly you've got one that might be worth 50% of your portfolio because others have dropped back down and it feels overexposed, but that's, you're on a good one then, so you should... It's kind of like, hold on to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, if you're accumulating, right, and you're overexposed because of that, you may be wrong. You know, may be wrong there. So be careful. Now, if it's you become overexposed because the share price has risen, you're probably right. But having said that, be careful. It may be that, you know, hype rise. You know, the hype on potential, hype on news. So that may not be sustainable. So you may have to trade out of that at the right time. But if it's on basic revenue growth, then, like I said, revenue growth, why? It's always a good revenue growth, pretty much. Because we're investing in small companies, they're new companies, they're startups, they're not going to have profits. But revenue growth is validation of their product and their business, you know? There's demand for it. And I'm talking about growth of about 20% year on year, pretty much, you know? So that just says, you know, it's okay having an idea, a concept that sounds amazing and really, you know, people love it. But if you can't get customers, if people aren't buying, you know, then it doesn't mean anything. It's just an idea. That's it. It's a startup. It's a concept. You need a commercial proof of concept. That is growth. That means revenue growth. Top line growth is what drives everything, pretty much. You know, and in the end, hopefully that growth will filter down, and you'll have decent margins somewhere on the line, because then the profits will grow. But revenue growth is the thing. No, so if you're accumulating, you could be wrong, unless there's some. And revenue growth there,
Go on. Well, I was going to say, if others have dropped away and that one stock has like really grown as part of your portfolio, you're better off trimming a bit just to keep your exposure in check.
That's what because I remember I was really overexposed with Gfinity, but I had that quite big rise, and I think I had about 40% of my portfolio then. I think you kind of suggested selling a bit. I think I'd put it into something like. I don't know, I think I might put it into escape rooms, actually, escape hunt, actually. So
get the brand right, Steve.
Well, it officially is escape rooms, isn't it? It's just.
It's a company, though, called Escape Hunt. Yeah.
Yeah, but I did put it into escape rooms.
You were saying, like, don't say escape rooms. It's like saying, I put my money into trainers when you bought Nike. Yeah. Into trainers, brother. New trainers, aren't they? Go on.
Yeah, anyway, that was it. I was just saying, like, I could have left it in Gfinity and been massively overexposed and probably wouldn't have been a bad place to leave it, but, you know, it kind of spreads the odds over to Escape Hunt.
Well, in fact, someone did say, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's still early on, right? I mean, you know, even like with the companies we're talking about, they're still early on. Like someone said about Gfinity the same, so they got a lot of Gfinity. And I said, well, there's been no news out there, but their broker note comes out with, you know, showing a 43% compound annual growth to 2025, you know? So this, we're talking above 20% revenue growth. It's taken a dip, of course, on the revenue from last year to this year because they were in a paper-thin margin sort of service, esports servicing company before the previous management. Did all these contracts which charged a lot, but there was no profit in it. And then John came in and said, we're not going to just do contracts with big names just for the sake of it for revenue because we're not earning anything. We need to sort of grow, you know, revenue with decent margins. And so that's what we've done. So the revenue's dropped, but they're higher margin. And so the gross profit's gone up and everything. So, but now the revenue will start to grow. So I think they're aiming for, like, the broker notes at 5.5 million this year, and I think 8.8 million next year, like 13 million the year after. And so, you know, you have to look at a multiple of that. But yeah, decent growth there. Like, hot sector. I like the management. In fact, they signed up another guy, didn't they? Who did they sign up? Another guy recently. Was it from Blizzard? I think it was.
Yes, it was.
Yes, thanks for that. Steve would know that. Yes. Yes. No, so I should say, basically, they've got now two ex-Apple executives, you know, pretty much high level. They got the ex-managing director of Telegraph Group, which is digital online, all that stuff. There's a guy now from Blizzard. So they're building a massive team there, you know? And I just think I know there's lack of news, but I forget the quote from that book, 100 Baggers. Don't make an investment decision based on a non-investment reason. You know, don't just think, oh, there's been no news out, I'm going to sell. Because that's that doesn't make any sense. Because, you know, we've trusted John and the team there to turn this around. Yeah, they're building a good team. Why would it go backwards now? You know, they know they've got a plan. They're putting the plan in place. So it's just having a bit of, you know, a bit of patience, isn't it? And see what they're doing. Because I do trust them. You know, I think they're doing the right thing. They've done the right thing. And they're building a better team. They're in the right space. And so I just think, what is it? I'm trying to find who the guy is. GFIN already a strong team. But since it's December, they now have senior management from the following companies: Apple, HP, Telegraph Group, Blizzard Entertainment, Benckiser, and Activision Blizzard. So they're all big names, these. And that's quite unheard of, I think, for a small company. So, yeah, just it's, do you know what I keep saying? The more I realise this, you know, it's more sinks in. It's the hardest thing to do is nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Just sit there. When the market's volatile, it plays with your mind and emotions. And you want to do something because you're hardwired to do something. Like, sell, get rid of it. But then, has the story changed? And in fact, talking about story changing, let's talk about Steve. I did not know Steve.
So, linking into that story, I disagree. The hardest thing to do is sell a stock that's minus 65% down.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you held on to it, Steve. You keep holding on to these stocks that I say dead head. And you think, no, it'll come, I get back to break even. That's what we're going to do. That's the book for you. How to break even in stocks.
It wouldn't be very long, would it?
Hold on. It's gone bust. Right, the last one has gone. Ignore that one.
Yeah, break even or bust.
So how many stocks do you have now, Steve?
Well, actually, you'll be proud of me. I've got down to 8/9, because 9 is my fund. So 8 stocks, really.
Okay, so what are those stocks?
Hang on. I should have them.
No idea.
Go open. So I've got BioM, Cora Gold.
BioM.
BioMe. It's because of the ticker. It confuses me.
That's a guy just said, actually, Steve, listened to the Weekend Podcast last week. He said, can you do a song, you know, Call On Me, but BioMe, BioMe. It's, yeah, it's BioM, Steve, but I like BioMe. BioMe.
BioM.
BioMe, it sounds better.
BioM.
It just flows better. I think it's just, yeah, anyway.
BioM. Why are we getting BioM for it? Not Boney M. Go on.
It's just the way the ticker reads, BioM.
BioM.
Not really, but okay.
Well, it does to me anyway. Cora Gold, Escape Hunt.
Escape Rooms.
Escape Rooms, yeah. Eurofermersals. Gfinity, Polarian, Truefin, United Oil and Gas, and that's it.
So you've got the five. What else? So you got the five we have, plus United Oil and Gas, Cora Gold. What was the other one you had? Different?
Eurofermersals.
What?
Europa Metals.
Do you still own those? Do you still have them?
Yeah, and I'm a proud 78% down in it.
Wow.
See, that's what happened, Steve, right? Do you know what? I was talking about this on the Friday podcast with Paul Hill. I didn't realise this, and I've looked at another good book I'm going to announce in a bit, I'm listening to, but in fact, they talk about it in the 100 Baggers book, but Warren Buffett's, you know, stock picking strategy evolved all the time. His mentor was Benjamin Graham. Benjamin Graham's stock picking strategy evolved pretty much month on month, quarter on quarter. So you have to evolve it. It's like, and I said, human beings evolve. That's why we've survived. That's why we're the most deadliest, awesome creature out there. Because we're clever enough to, you know, evolve, survive, and you have to, you know? So when I went from realizing how do you build proper wealth, it was realizing that pre-revenue companies, you're not going to get wealthy on. Yeah, you can have pop and drops and you may do well if you time it well. But do you really want to be trading in, trading out, getting stressed because news comes out one day they need cash or something's gone wrong and they just drop by 50%? I don't want that, you know? I don't want that at all. So you're more likely to have that with, you know, a pre-revenue hype stock than you are with a company actually building revenues and profits. And so you want to catch them early in hot sectors that'll grow for years and years. Now, I realise resource companies not generating anything, they'll pop and drop, like Europa Metals.
But the only reason I'm in Europa Metals, and I've not sold it, it's my cash pot, very little left. But every now and then, and you can't disagree with this, every now and then, because it happened last year and it happened the year before, it just has like a random spike where it goes up by like 40%.
Why did you sell then?
It's because I wasn't in that right frame of mind now, but I'm prepared now. So when it does that next, I will sell and take the minimized loss. So that's my plan on that one.
Yeah, so just sub break even.
In the meantime, you could have put it, taken the hit, put it in a stock, and recovered it elsewhere in a better.
Well, I'm -78% down, so it'd have to be a hell of a bounce for it to do.
But Steve, it's like I said before, it's like selling three donkeys to buy a thoroughbred. You know, honestly, those donkeys are never going to win you a race.
But so, the one that you were just about to talk about was Salt Lake Potash.
Yeah, yeah. So this week, Steve came up with another surprise. Salt Lake Potash came out with a trading halt. Oh my God, not again! And Steve said, "Oh, that's taking the hit. I should have sold that." What? And I said, "What are you talking about? She said all that." He said, "But on the other hand, Trackwise has done well. She's still in Trackwise as well." He said, "Trackwise has gone up."
And I said, "Yeah, but he's now sold that."
You can't laugh about that, because that actually wasn't a bad stock to keep on, will it? Having some really good news. And it probably would continue to rise. But as you pointed out, when you were trying to get me to sell it, which I have sold it now, is actually, putting it somewhere else would probably make bigger profits quicker. So
that's yeah, yeah. Did you sell a profit, Trapwise?
No.
So, no, the thing is, right, that's
break even?
No, I was about -20% down in Trackwise.
Okay. Yeah, so
you see, this is what I'm saying about Steve's podcast. It would be a great podcast. You could just go through all the stocks.
So what do you mean? Basically, it'll be a podcast of misery.
It'll be a podcast of misery for me. For everyone else, it'd be like, oh, I'm actually quite good at it.
It's encouraging for other people. They're like, oh, what? I'm glad I got out of Salt Lake Potash at 25p. Yeah,
if you think you're a bad investor, listen to my podcast.
Well, exactly. I think it's my
But do you know what? You've still made money though, Steve, haven't you?
What, on Trackwise?
No, generally.
No.
Oh, generally, yeah, I'm up. But
see, what does that say? Stick with your winners, get rid of your losers. Because, listen, so this is what happens. So, SO4 came out. The three reasons I say why you should sell a stock, right? And it's hard to stick to because I haven't stuck to in the past. Is one of them is if you get overexposed, and you need to top slice a little bit. The story's changed or the story's come to an end in some way. The growth isn't there anymore. People said, someone said on Discord, has Salt Lake Potash story changed? And I said, yes, many a time. And so what do you mean by that? So and I go through it. I said, first of all, let's talk about funding. Extra funding was required a couple of times. Why does this mean the story's changed? Firstly, it wasn't in the plan, right? And so you base your growth metrics and everything off that, the size of the company. So when you raise money, it increases the market capitalization of the company, makes the company bigger, which means it become more expensive on a valuation basis. So let's say a company, for example, is 100 million market cap, and they're saying they're going to project to 10 million of profit this year. So you're like, okay, their valuation is 10 times the PE of 10, pretty much. Earnings, profit, 10 times that. Now, if they say, decide to do an equity fundraise and to raise 50 million, they are now 150 million market cap. Then now all of a sudden, they're valued on 15 times that profit, not 10 times anymore. So they've just become more expensive, all right? So that happened, first of all. So the economics have decreased, they got worse. Production, there's production delays. That was not in the plan. Then they had a production reduction. They said, we're going to produce less, actually. So again, they become more expensive because not only the market cap has gone up, they have less in profits. So let's say 150 million. They've gone from possible 10 million profits to 5 million. Yep. So, that 5 million into 150, how much is that now? 30 times. Yeah, 30 times. So it's gone from being 10 times valuation on 10 times profits to 30 times. So it's become, three times more expensive. And then they're saying now they may do another fundraise. I thought, well, hang on a sec. And so you've got to question now the management. You say, well, what's happened here? This has been poorly managed because there's been, release after release that's been, smacked shareholders in the face several times. And in my mind, I sort of said a while back, I'm reallocating my capital here. A nice way of saying, do you know what? This is not going to plan. The story is changing. And you've got to question now whether you trust management, stick to the plan they have now. What is that plan? And you think, Daddy, I think you give management one chance, right? The second time they do it, they mess up, get out. Because they probably won't change, so you've got to change, full stop. You know,
when we got out and I got, and I took, I think it was almost a 30% hit on that, but it was based on exactly that dilution, but also that they originally said they wouldn't need any more funding. Mm. And then hold on, there's not only more funding, but it was a big funding at a big discount, massive dilution. You're like, hold on, that's a complete, like, they, you could have forecast that. You surely could have seen that. And you haven't done your sums right. You've misled the market effectively. And so I felt, no, that, and I'm, that's where I've learned over the years to go, no, go with your gut. You've got to get out. It's horrible taking a hit like that, but you've got to take the hit because it's only going to get worse. And here we are, and it has got worse. So I'm,
I think the, what you said is previous to the, also earlier, reframing it, not seeing it as a loss on that company, but seeing it invested in a better, as a reallocation of capital, you know, reallocate the capital to a better company. And then, you know, like I said, and I said to Steve, track wise, I said, what do you want to put in? I said, do you know what? Trading update just came up from Biome. I would put it in there because that's literally the growth. They've had one profit warning this year. They've come back now. The trading update since Fine is back on track pretty much. But I said, you compare track-wise to, I said, both in hot sectors, track-wise, and Biome, bioplastics versus EV. But there are, they're directly exposed Biome because they're in that area and they're producing that stuff. They are,
but they're, so they're a tiny market cap, aren't they?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, track-wise, is like 10 times revenue already. It's valued at, you know? It's like 60 million market cap. I think it's a bit too, so it's 10 times revenue. I think they're also at manufacturing capacity with this big contract they've got. So the upsizing of that scalability is really hard. They have to buy another factory, basically, to get it going. Biome don't, you know, they don't, it's not a huge amount of, they don't need massive factories to produce what they produce. They're also only valued at 2x revenue. Like I said, they're valued at, what, 14 million market cap. And I don't think people read that trading update properly because we're at £5 a share, pretty much, on Biome, right? Before that warning came out. And I explained what happened with that warning. And Paul came on the podcast, CEO of Biome, came on the podcast. And he said, so our growth, we've got one big US customer. And he said, and to get to that stage is very hard because what we have to do is create bespoke products, pretty much, or, you know, for that customer. But now we've done it for one. This, other customers will look at that, other coffee pod manufacturers, say, okay, that's fine. Basically, you've proven the concept. So they do trials, of course, for new customers, but it takes a lot less time to get it commercialized because they're already up and running with one customer. They've got a pipeline of six now in the US. The second one had a problem. So the problem was, and there's nothing done, the second US customer had bought about 80 grand's worth of kit off Biome to change their manufacturing process, and so it's going to happen, and they are going to do it. But it comes out of logistics. Somebody in that company in the US messed up with the logistics. I think it was a pressurized air or something mundane, and so they had to delay it. So they said now that, so they did a training update, and they said basically they found a solution for that problem. That US customer, it's going to be ratified very soon. They also said in there, I said, our reputation for innovative biodegradable solutions continues to rise, and further new business opportunities have been under assessment in the half year. We will keep shareholders informed of progress as these opportunities as the year progresses. They also said that the global shipping problems happening due to COVID is still persisting, but it's getting better. But they also now know about it. Previously, they didn't know about it. So where it was taking 3 weeks to ship to US, it's now taking 3 months. Now they know about that, so that they have a contingency plan. But also another part of their business, which took a hammering, I haven't even factored into Biome's valuation, is their Stanelco RF technologies. This is like an optical fiber sort of furnaces that you sell. And they said to me, pretty much half the world's 5G optical things are used on it. So they sell these machines that make this stuff, the fiber optics. They said, that took a massive hit in COVID, and I've written it off, and I think they will sell that off as soon as it recovers a little bit. But so there continues to be encouraging signs of recovery within the division's core fibre optic furnace market, with several large equipment inquiries received and contractual discussions are underway. So that part of the business will also recover. And then they say at the end, the board expects to return to higher rates of growth in due course. So we're not back at that £5, we're still at 385. And we got that they are penned in 18%, even with this hit, 18% growth this year, 43% next year, and I think we're still 2x sales. That's all we are. You know, less than that on this is current year, next year it's less than 2x sales. So this is undervalued, but in a huge growth area. And I think, isn't, you know, human nature is amazing, isn't it? What they do is create these bioplastics, and fungi basically eats them. So using nature to help nature, you know, it sort of works. You know, that's the way you'll beat this kind of thing, or help beat. It's one of the. It's not the only solution, of course, the plastic problem.
No,
but it's one of them. And I just think Biome is under the radar, but it's one of these companies. I genuinely think it'll rise like crazy sooner or later. They'll release, you know, some decent news on a new contract, updated trading update, and it'll rally because there's not much stock available. In fact, Steve, didn't you have a problem buying some stock?
Yeah, it's right in two tranches, and the second tranche, I had to wait a couple of hours before I could buy it.
The big numbers that Steve deals in, though, that's why.
I could have bought it, but I would have had to buy it in like five or six different tranches, and the amount I was buying probably wouldn't have been worth it. So, yeah, I two tranches, I'm all right with that. So, well, for the amount of money I put in.
Yeah, listen, that's the one, because again, it's based, the rise will be based on, you know, revenue growth, and that will feed through to, you know, they don't need cash. So they're a decent cash level there. So they will be, they're pending to be sort of cash flow positive next year. So, you know, what's not like here? It's under the radar, you know? I mean, I think what muddied the waters for me was the RF sort of optical furnace side, which had a real bad time with COVID. But even that's coming back, and I haven't even factored that into any valuations yet. So I think it's a good year. They do very well. And also Steve's question on Escape Hunt, mentioned that, of course, and but lower volume. But did you see two stories? I tweeted them out recently. Very interesting. I said from the BBC this week, the number of empty shops in Britain has continued to rise as retailers struggle with the effects of COVID pandemic. Shopping centres have been the hardest hit, with nearly one in five units empty. So you can imagine that. So I don't know, Steve, if you walked through, have you been to St. David's Centre recently?
Yeah, it's quite deserted.
Yeah. And the thing is, that'll build, though. I don't know if you saw Amazon's results. They took a hit. Good results, 27% growth quarter on quarter. But they said it's starting to level off. We can see people going back to bricks and mortar now, you know, whereas everyone was buying from home before and everyone set up accounts. So their growth, they expect to level off now. And also the second story from the BBC was that experiences are replacing closed high street stores. There's now a BBC reporter went to this one in South London. So there's now a go-kart track in the old booty hall of Debenhams store in southwest London. The escalators, they say, are the only trace of the former department store, which remain. All four floors are now being transformed into a high-tech entertainment venue. This guy here said, "We are creating a department store of fun." This is Michael Harrison, co-founder of Gravity. It's due to open on the 1st of August. He said, "We have three bars, two restaurants, go-karting, a bowling alley, huge screens to watch sporting events and adventure golf. This is the future of the high street. It's about experience. Experience is a growing market with Twitter and you know, Instagram and TikTok. People want to take pictures and videos doing silly things." And Michael just said, this guy said, this is the key here. He says, "We have no shortage of retail landlords now ringing him up, apparently offering him potential new locations." And the UK's biggest property company, Landsec, owns the Southside Shopping Mall where Gravity is based. Other centres include Bluewater in Kent, Lakeside, Trinity in Leeds. Landsec's box, Mark Allen, the boss of Landsec, said a quarter of what is currently retail space will need to be turned into something different. And some people think it's less than more than that. And if you notice that company Landsec, Escape Hunt's already done deals at Lakeside and at other, I think there's one also in, they've also done deals with Landsec, you know, the biggest property owner. But there's quite a, I think it's about four big commercial retailers. And a question you asked last time on the podcast, you know, and I said, I think they'll do deals, multiple deals probably, because it's going to happen. Because I said, these landlords are desperate and they're offering incentives. So I know Escape Hunt, well, I haven't done news out for a while, but I think there's going to be deals done here, left, right and centre. And if you think about where Richard, the CEO of Escape Hunt, came from, he used to work for Pret and his job was acquiring new sites. And he used to acquire one a week, pretty much. Of course, the sites they needed to acquire were smaller and easier to find, you know. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if, in fact, land sector in St David's as well, Steve. So there could be one there. So if you look at the big two even, or big three sort of operators in this area, they've got places there everywhere, and there are empty units everywhere. So I think there's so many opportunities for escape hunt here, and people are thinking, why are they doing deals? Well, hang on a second, wait. Good deals take a while to put together. If you're doing a few of them, well, actually, I hope they will, it does take time, but I think they're going to beat the target of 20 sites. That target was for next summer. They're already there. They're on 19 already. So I think we must have decent... And it's, just don't worry about seasonality and market fluctuations, you know? There's no news out. People start to sell. Have a bit of faith in the company, a bit of management, you know? I think it'll do well. Growth will be there. Same with Plarium, isn't that? So Plarium is just selling off. People couldn't get enough of that stock at £1. It was heading towards £1 breakout. People were buying. And now it started dipping. People are selling. I thought, hang on a sec. We are 5 days away. In 5 days, it's 2 months away on the 5th of August. That's 2 months away from October. Is that right? September, October, yeah. From the FDA approval date. It's not going to go down, you know, as we get closer to that. It's going to go up. And there's a 90% chance the broker gives of it passing, you know, the FDA approval. And the growth of that company is huge, massive. So why are people panicking there? Just hold on, you know? Hold on.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And another one where you think, well, there's an opportunity to top up, although I'm happy with my exposure. Sit and wait.
Yeah, I've got no cash. And I said, which is annoying because... I've said that a couple of people, definitely. I mean, I want to. I've got one non-core holding, which is taking a hammering, but I want that to bounce back, and I'll probably, you know, top up it. I'm pretty much got plenty of exposure to all. I need to buy more Truefin. I think that's what I need to buy more of because I think there's. Do you see Lloyds came out? Do you still own Lloyds?
Yeah, I do own some Lloyds. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Because they came out. I don't see that Lloyds bought. Let me just get the news up here. They focus on digital more. And, of course, Truefin's Satago, which is one of the four holding companies they have, have done a deal with Lloyds.
Yeah, they bought a pension platform this week. And I thought it'd be nice if they released an RNS going and they're buying Satago.
Yeah, so Lloyds buys fintech Embark to make a wealth push. So basically, it's pensions and investments platform, digital platform. It's pretty much a robo sort of thing, do your thing. And... Satago's the same. I mean, in fact, one of the guys from it's in this sort of area and he knows a lot about it. He said, they offer invoice management and, if customers are not getting paid properly on time, they can not only get software to find out who's not paying them very quickly and automate it, send them emails, but they can also get invoice loans, you know, sort of a holdover from Lloyds and all that stuff. And this is what Satago does, invoice finance. And it's a huge area. It's invoice financing. Apparently, it's turning into a massive industry now. New players are rising all the time. Satago is one of the big players here. We've voted for one of the best fintech companies. So I think Lloyds, I think it's entirely possible that Lloyds makes an offer for... but Lloyds don't mind paying up. You know, people say, why not buy it now? They would get it cheap. Big companies don't want that. They want proof of commercial content. They're happy to pay over the odds as though they can see cash flows coming in for many years to come. You know, they don't mind paying the odds. And that's better. Go on.
Lloyds results were positive, bouncing back from the pandemic and starting to pay a little dividend again and all of that. So everything moving on forward. So, yeah, exactly. They'll surely look to expand and look to get back to acquiring these sorts of companies, hopefully.
They will. If you just do a search, what I did is go on there. I mean, they come up with their final results, part one, part two, and all the stuff. And there's acquisition of that company. But if you just go into any final results and just do a word search for something you're looking for, like if you did type in, on me, it's Apple F, and then type in digital and scan through the document, and you can see how big they are in digital expansion, you know, and less of, obviously, real stores and all that stuff. And they're all about supporting small and medium-sized businesses, but digitally, you know, helping them, giving these tools. And that's, Satago really fits into that really well. So there's that, and of course, there's PlaySack, it's very exciting, gaming. I like it a lot. And it even dropped down recently. It doesn't drop down a lot. There's very little volume on Truefin. It drops a little bit, then it comes back up. I think...
That's probably the one stock I'm quite low down on at the moment, probably less than 3% at the moment in my portfolio.
Yeah. Well, I know I want a bit more of that, but sort of thing. But do you know what I'm using as a cash pot, Steve?
Go on.
Cash?
No, my crypto investments.
Right.
Because I thought, right, this is my thought behind this. That people are saying Bitcoin is an asset, and it probably is. I mean, you know, it's self-fueling, isn't it? What is an asset? You know, years ago, people wouldn't have called gold an asset, many years ago, but it is, and you've held it for a long time, then well. Bitcoin is more transferable on the world than gold. You know, it's easy to hold. It's probably a bit more tradable, so a bit more volatility. But also, its supply is finite, you know. And so if it's been the best performing asset in 10 years, why am I keeping my money in my bank when it's earning nothing whatsoever? You know, not a lot of spare cash. But why don't you just invest it now in three good cryptos I think have a future, and just keep it there and get a decent... And I don't want to make, you know, lots of money in this because I've not a lot of money to spare. But, I mean, surely any kind of return is better than just holding it in a bank, you know?
Yeah, true. It's a higher risk.
Yeah, but
strategy.
Right now, do you know what? I've earned already, I think, 20% on the money I put in there.
What crypto are you putting into then?
Just three of them, which is they are bigger ones. They're like Bitcoin, which is basically an asset. I mean, you can't transfer money because it's too volatile. It's not really. People rumored to it, say that you can use it for money. Maybe you can, but it's too volatile at the moment. So, and also, it's not very, you know, economic as far as the environment is concerned. But people are saying they're changing that. Ethereum, which I always like the thought of, like someone said, Bitcoin was Netscape or something like that, and Ethereum is Google. You know, or some of that. So everyone building apps or decentralized applications, dApps, they're pretty much using Ethereum to do it, you know. But there's different things between, there's just proof of concept, there's proof of stake, two different things. So with Bitcoin, you get paid if you hold it, you know, if you mine it. So proof of work, pretty much. And that's why the energy consumption goes into. If you're mining all the time, it's very, you know, high intensity as far as energy is concerned. Now, a lot of cryptos are changing to proof of stake. So if you hold it, that's what you get rewarded for. And that's, you don't have to mine so much, just hold, you know, what you got. And so Ethereum is going through this hard fork now because they're going from that proof of work concept, which is mining, which is very energy intensive, to proof of stake, which is not energy intensive. Now, the third one I own is Cardano, which is basically being built on white papers and with science behind it. And everything they do has been tested, and they're building for future-proofing, you know? So it's energy efficient, it's very fast. In fact, Ethereum is now doing a hard fork, which they're changing it a little bit to try and go towards that. But Cardano's, even though it hasn't yet got as many apps on it, people, you know, it's quite a few thousand apps on Ethereum, I think, but they're going through this development phase where they're sort of future-proofing it. So it's, even though it's quite a big market cap, but I don't know how you measure market caps on these things, I think it may have a bit more future, and there's a lot of hype around it. So, yeah, but obviously the story's been old. So, yeah, just those three. Ethereum, Cardano, and Bitcoin. And not a lot in there, but I said, I'm earning more than I would in a bank. I mean, it is more volatile. And I think now, it seems like the chart on Bitcoin is turning around a bit now. So it's had a bit of a sell-off. It went from 65,000 down to, what? 35,000? Is that ridiculous? Or 28,000? But now it's bounced at 41,000. So, so maybe worth the thing. So,
you can tell me and Steve aren't interested. Yeah. No, yeah. Interesting.
But let's say it is, though. Let's say, and in fact, the technology, right, is right. It's never been hacked ever, Bitcoin. Of course, people's accounts have been hacked on these exchanges. That's not Bitcoin. The technology of Bitcoin had never been hacked, you know, in over 10 years. And yet, decentralized finance is like, basically, you don't have middle people, you don't have banks in the way earning money. That's why there's so much resistance about it. Now, you've got all these, you know, countries like China saying, we're banning Bitcoin mining because it's bad. You know, digital currency is not good. Then they come up with, we are setting up our own digital currency. They're all right, you are doing digital currency. So that invalidates the technology completely, doesn't it? All these countries now are setting up their own digital currencies, you know? And in fact, one of the big senators said, it'll probably even out, you know, world wealth, and it's more, you know, it'll help, people with the unbanked of the world, because there's so many people with, you know, who don't have bank accounts in the world, and they can just hold this stuff on their mobile phones, pretty much, on apps. So it sort of works, you know, it really works, and I think it's going to be in the future.
I don't disagree with that, but the whole concept of using it for cash payments and replacing money, it's just so far off, because it's just you wouldn't put your money into that and say I'm going to use that to buy my morning Starbucks, because you could go in and because it just fluctuates so much. Well, I personally wouldn't. I can't imagine.
Right. Yeah, it needs to settle down, and it will do. Bitcoin will settle down, I think, because there's less. Obviously, I mean, it'll get to the stage where it'll be less volatile. Imagine, I mean, if you go back, we're talking about the price when gold first became tradable, you know, or a spot price. So it was very volatile, you know. But then it settles down after a while. I mean, it gets a certain level. I guess it's big enough, it'll settle down. But yeah, someone said right now, and I don't know if it's true, they said crypto is at the point now where the internet was in 1990. You know, that's where we are. You know, so there's a long road ahead yet. But, you know, they said it is the future, and people will question it, but it is the future. But of course, there'd be times when you have crashes, like, for example, Amazon, based on the internet, of course, that dropped by 90%, you know, when the dot-com bubble burst. People said it's going to go bust, and, you know, and that's actually the time to buy into it. The fear is high. And so, you know, when you have all these rumours about people banning it and all this stuff, that's when you get into it, because you may never know. I'm holding 3, just in case. But, yeah, the concept is right, you know, but... will I be holding the right ones? I don't know, but the tide will rise, I think. But it'll rise all. But yeah, no, it won't. I think the volatility in Bitcoin will settle down after a while, you know. So yeah, but I just think you've got to have a. Do you know what? Who's the guy? What's his name? He's a billionaire. He's worth listening to. But
Steve.
That's it. Steve said to me, he said, "Listen, even if you just put 1% of your net worth into crypto, it's worth doing, isn't it?" Because, you know, that's my thinking. Even if you just don't hold it, don't hold it in a bank account, because you essentially at the moment you're losing money due to inflation. Hold it in something that's deflationary, that's not inflationary, you know, so sort of, you know, anti-inflationary, like Bitcoin, and hopefully it'll go up. So so it just makes a bit of sense. Not a lot. If you want, boys, I'll send you a link to my Coinbase account.
Okay.
On Coinbase, by the way. A lot of people criticize it, but you know, you can do little videos and they give you crypto. So you learn about crypto and they give you some crypto. So I've got $4.53 of AMP, the cryptocurrency. I've just watched the video on, took a little quiz on. I got $2.32 of Barnbridge, $1.81 of Polygon. I don't know what they're for. You know, I hold them and just watch the video on them. But yeah, so I just think it's worth having.
Well, I kind of, because I did buy into Bitcoin about over a year ago, didn't I? And I think I bought it at around about $5,000, and I ended up selling it at a very minimal profit, which is a change for me. But so yeah, I just kind of wish I just forgot about that, to be honest, because that would have
Yeah, so me, I've been doing videos on it, talking about it all the time. Then all of a sudden, I just got bored again.
Patron. Well, I sold it because of you. You told me to sell it.
That was at $9,000 I got out, and then went 65,000. So I'm not going to expect, you know, obviously the bigger it gets, the less it'll go up. But I'm not expecting multiples on it. But I mean, I just genuinely think, rather than hold your cash in a bank, put in that. Not cash you can afford to lose, of course, just a little bit of saving here. But anything else, boys? Anything else?
I think that's covered it.
Are you worried about COVID?
No.
No, well, in Wales, they're letting everything go next Saturday, aren't they? So if you're double jabbed, you don't have to self-isolate anymore.
Yeah.
Come in contact with someone.
Yeah, I think they should stop reporting figures on COVID now. People are too aware of it. I mean, I was looking, right, the amount of people who tested positive on the 30th, well, yesterday, was 29,000. You know, and they are doing a million tests a day. So 29,622 people. You know, over the last 7 days, that's been 197,000. That's a drop of 36% on the previous 7 days. By the way, the last time there was 29,000 people tested positive was on the January wave. There was 38,000 people in hospital, and now there's only 5,000. That's an 85% drop. You know, so I don't know if it's going to get better than that. I mean, people, like I said, people having car crashes and all that, taking more, tripping over.
That's why in Wales we've got ahead of the game, because we held back on the Freedom Day. In fact, we're getting everything we're getting, because we haven't got Freedom Day until next Saturday, but they're doing it all in one day now in Wales. So.
What do you mean?
That day is when it all stops, yeah. Mm. Like, that's the date.
What do you mean, Steve? Have you still got restrictions in Wales?
Yeah. So all our nightclubs are all still closed. You can't go stand at a bar. So it's still the same as it was before your Freedom Day. So that our Freedom Day is next Saturday, but they're also letting the self-isolated rule drop with contact, which I think's, yeah, because I've been in contact with three people directly now in the last month with COVID and, yeah, not caught it. So that kind of says to me the double jab works.
How do you know you're not caught it?
Because I got a PCR test.
Oh, there we are.
Yeah, but have you tested it? Have you tested immediately after? Yeah, it's difficult to know.
Not immediately after, obviously, because the time. But yeah, so I was doing lateral flow, and I get regularly tested by the National Office of
ONS.
Yeah, ONS. That's it, ONS. Yeah. They test me regularly as well. So cool. Yeah, but I've come out negative with three people I've had direct contact with. So it's quite looking positive, isn't it?
As much as I love talking about COVID, I've got to go cycling now. So can I chip off?
I'm going to chip off as well. But that's anything else, Steve? Okay. Steve, recommendation? Any TV recommendations? Pete, Steve, anything?
Olympics. Just watch the Olympics. Yes. It's
brilliant. Oh, the BMX. It was cracking, I thought. I love the BMX in.
I love it. I love all of it. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, it's great. It's next to Clarkson's Farm.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Okay, Clarkson's
Farm. Mention that next week, Steve. We didn't hear about that.
Okay, I'll tell you about it next week.
Oh, boys, speak to you next week.
Bye.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.